at Vasda. Moy used to make me watch along the aisle and spot the CCTV, and then she put the cans in under paper or in the wee tray under the buggy and piled coats on them. She used to bring extra ones for that. Once she zipped two bottles of wine into my coat, and I had to hold my hand up on my chest when we went through the checkout. She said to be quiet and not to cry and to stand close to her when we went through. I asked her if me and Peppa would get arrested too, if she got arrested, and she said, "No, but they'll take yous off me." I got to the end of the Forestry Road and then came out in the car park near where we buried our mobiles on the way here, then followed the path along onto the road and up to the main road and the lay-by where the bus stopped. I think I'd done it in under 2 hours, and I knew there was a bus every hour. There was a woman waiting in the lay-by with a wee dog on a lead. I walked up and stood at the other end and looked back up towards the way the bus came so she didn't look at my face for too long. I could feel her staring at me, and then I heard her shout, "Be about 10 minutes, son." And I held up my hand to say thanks and carried on looking up the road. I could hear her talking to the dog. It was a wee white terrier, and she was going, "Lulu, Lulu, the bus is coming, Lulu," to it in a high baby voice. I looked, and the dog was wagging its tail and looking up at her and sort of dancing about all excited. The woman was old with short grey hair and big glasses. She grinned at me when I looked and said, "She loves the bus." I went, "Aye," and nodded. "Been hiking up the glen, son?" she said, coming a bit nearer me. And I said aye and tried to look down. "Are you a scout?" I said aye and thought, brilliant. Then we heard the bus coming and she said, "Oh, here we go." I got a 4-pound day to return and found a seat on my own upstairs. It was 9 miles into the town and the road followed the river all the way down the valley. The town was wee, with one main street and lots of wee shops. It was busy, with loads of people and a farmer's market with stalls in the street, selling cheese and candles and a buffalo burger van. I got off the bus and walked up and down the street, looking at all the places I needed to go and get stuff. There was a co-op and a wee bookshop that sold cards and pictures. Nobody even looked at me. I bought Belvitas, 2 loaves of bread, 4 tins of corned beef and 4 tins of beans, another Dundee cake and another cherry cake, and a box of tea bags and a bag of sugar. It weighed like hell in the backpack, and I knew I'd never be able to get enough food for us for weeks and weeks or months. Maybe I'd have to keep coming back here once a week. I bought a big steak and ketchup for Peppa for a treat when I got back, and in the health food shop I got more nuts and dried apricots. I also got a big bag of Bombay mix for Peppa because she loves it. In the chemist I got soap and shampoo and plasters for the first aid kit. In the bookshop there was a young woman with blonde hair and an English accent, and when she saw me looking she said, "Are you looking for anything in particular?" And I said I wanted a book for my wee sister who was 10, and she said, "Is she a good reader?" And I said, "Aye." And then she said, "What sort of things does she like?" And I said she liked stories about Indians and people in wars and people going on adventures. I didn't look at her when I was speaking. I just kept staring at the bookshelves. It smelled nice in there, like vanilla and sugar. The woman said, "What about this?" And she showed me a book called Treasure Island that had pirates and a treasure chest and a sandy beach on the front. The woman said, "The language might be a bit strange for her at first, but if she's a good reader, she might like it. It's a classic." I said, "She's clever. She likes words." I didn't say what kind of words. The woman held up another book called Kidnapped, with an old boat on the front and 2 men holding swords and wearing 18th century clothes. This is by the same author. It's a fantastic adventure story. I got them both and they were £9.98 and I put them in the backpack. Now it was really heavy on my back and I had 5 miles to do when I got back to the forest. But I didn't think about it and did what it says in the SAS Survival Handbook about setting and achieving small goals minute by minute and not projecting as a way of keeping up morale in stressful survival situations. So I went to the library and paid £4 for an hour's internet access on a PC. I knew I was going to do this all the time and I knew deep in my mind that it was why I had really come into town, to find out what had happened after we ran, and where Ma was, and where the police and the social work were looking for us. There were loads of stories about us. I searched Google News and put in our names, Sal Marina and Paula Brown. The latest headlines were all, search widens for missing schoolgirls and missing girls, police extend search area. I went back a week. I found sisters missing after stepdad killing and desperate mum pleads for missing sisters to come back. There were pictures of Mo at a press conference crying and a full face photo of Robert. Further down there were pictures of me when I was 10 and a red school sweatshirt and a picture of Peppa when she was 8. There was a picture from one of Mo's phones of me and Peppa staring, and Peppa was wearing her black fleece and I had a white t-shirt on and my hair was shorter. I read a story about the press conference and it said Mo was pleading with us to come back and we were not in any trouble and she just wanted to know we were safe. The policeman said he believed we were in the area where we lived and maybe being held or hidden by someone and that we are increasingly concerned about the safety of Sal Marina and Paula. Then I found an STV video of people searching round our flats and along the wall and up to the lighthouse and by the shore. There were crowds all wearing high-vis jackets and I saw Ian Leckie and Mary and people who lived in our flats like Big Chris and Mrs Duggan with the dog on a lead. The voice said, concerned neighbours and friends took part in a search for the missing girls who vanished from the flat in Linlithgow Court on Wednesday morning. The body of their mother's partner, Robert McComb, was found in the flat after police were called by a neighbour. Police say he died from stab wounds. The girl's mother, Claire Brown, 29, was in the flat at the time of the girl's disappearance and it is still unclear how the sisters, Sal Marina, 13, and Paula, 10, left the flat. Police say they were last known to be in the flat on Tuesday night. Local volunteers scoured waste ground, parks and areas of the shore. I skipped down and found CCTV lead in search for missing sisters and school uniform riddle of missing girls from 4 days ago. There was footage of us at the train station in Glasgow, me with a big rucksack and Peppa with her backpack walking across by the shops in the school uniforms. Then I started to feel a panic coming and my heart started banging very fast and I felt like someone was squeezing my chest. I was just staring at the screen and the shot of us went all bloody. I wanted to breathe, but I couldn't. And I started to try and stand up, and I staggered back into the chair, and it went over with a big crash. My eye was looking along the grey carpet down between metal shelves of books, and black leather shoes were running towards me, and a man was saying, "All right, it's okay, it's okay." He was old and wearing a blue shirt and tie, and he crouched down beside me, and I started panicking again. I hadn't minimised the screen so he'd see what I was looking at, but he was sitting me up and saying, "Are you feeling faint?" And I said, "Aye." And then I said, "I'm okay, I just tripped." I was trying to see round him to see if the CCTV of us was still on the screen. It made me sit with my head between my knees, and he rubbed my back and went, "Just breathe, you're all right." I didn't want him to rub me, and I wriggled out from his hands and got up, still trying to see the screen, and I was going, I'm fine, I need to go outside. He was looking right at me and smiling. His face was big, and he had a grey beard and little round glasses. He said, "Ah, it is warm in here. Go out and have a breath of air." He turned and then looked straight at the page I had up with the CCTV footage of us. There was the bloody grey of me and Peppa, and a time and date line and the headline underneath. He stood still for a minute, and then he walked away smiling. I stepped over to the PC and quit the page and deleted my search history, then got the backpack and swung it onto my shoulder, and the tins in it clanked, and I walked straight out. I walked up the street breathing deep, and I felt really hungry, and I wondered if that was why I fell and started blacking out. My head was racing with all the stuff on the internet about us and the guy seeing the page. If they searched and looked at what I was looking at, they might guess who I was, and I still didn't know what had happened to Ma, and I was worried about getting back for Peppa. To calm down, I went and got a buffalo burger and chips and a can of Coke and sat on a bench that looked out across the river and ate them. Buffalo tastes like beef. I got that lovely rushy feeling you get when you're really hungry and you eat and you want to dance about it. I felt better and calmer, and my mind stopped racing and worrying. When you are hungry, you get tense and your body produces adrenaline and other hormones that make you want to get food. So that's what had happened to me, I think. I was going to have to take a risk and go back into the library. Sometimes you have to calculate the potential loss and gain of a decision when you cannot know the outcome and are risking something. Predatory fish like pike do this when they're hunting. It's a kind of calculation where they weigh the potential energy they will get from attacking a prey against the amount of energy it will take them to attack it and the likelihood of them being successful, given certain variables like how far away the fish is, what kind of fish it is, and even things like water temperature and flow. If the gain outweighs the loss and the risk, then the attack. When you think about it, that is a very complex calculation. And pike do it in milliseconds with a really small brain. That is why big pike often only take very big lures, or lures that create enough disturbance to appear like a big prey fish. So I thought about it, and I went back into the library. And when I went in, the man with the beard was on the desk, and he held up his hand and went, "Feeling better?" And I said, "Aye," and went to the terminal. I like old men, like him and Ian Leckie. I had nearly 30 minutes left, but I couldn't find anything about Ma in the news bits. I just found a little thing from a paper that said, "The chaotic lives of missing sisters," and there was a picture of her flats, and another picture of me and Peppa when we were wee, and a big picture of Robert. One bit said, "The dead man, Robert McComb, 31, had been Claire Brown's partner for 3 years. Police say he was well known to them and had spent time in prison and had a string of convictions for theft, burglary and assault. Police sources confirm McComb had suffered stab wounds to the throat and was found in the bedroom of the oldest girl, Sal Marina, when police entered the flat last Wednesday morning. There was a picture of my school, and the rector had said, "Sal Marina is an intelligent and capable girl who received special support in the school's vulnerable learners unit." I read everything I could and searched Ma's name again. And then I thought of Twitter, because people always tweet stuff about murders that you don't get in the papers. When I searched Ma on Twitter, there were loads of tweets, lots of them by people who said they knew her or knew us. Mary had tweeted on it loads of times. Hers went, "Praying for their safety, God bless them both and keep them safe." A woman called Blonde Iris said, "Just praying for the lassies missing 7 days now." There were ones about Robert, one from Gordon Mack that said, "Robert McComb was a horrible wee shite and got what he deserved. If the lassie did him, it was cause he was abusing her." People had retweeted it and there was a thread all about that. They said stuff like, "He was a fucking pedo, had it coming." Then I found one from Alison at the club from yesterday and it said, "Claire in rehab now, getting dried out, in the Abbey, NHS are paying." Another on that thread said, "The Abbey is the best place for her now, even with the lassies away. Claire needs to go into a recovery programme." And that was Ian Leckie. I searched rehab, the Abbey Scotland, and found one called the Abbey, and there was a picture on the website of an old stone house with a big lawn and trees in the sunshine. It said they offered detox and rehabilitation for people suffering from addiction problems, and it followed the 12-step recovery programme. And it was in Galloway. I got the address and searched it on Google Maps and then Google Earth. It was 26 miles from the Forest Park and set back off a road. That was where Ma was. I printed out the map and the site page and then my hour expired and I paid for the print and I went. I got back to the lay-by in the main road at just after 3. It was 5 miles to go now and there was no way I'd do it in the light. But I started back through the car park and up the forestry road. There were 2 cars in the car park and as I was going up the forestry road, a man and woman, both in cagoules and walking boots, were coming back down and they just nodded at me, but I kept looking down. But I felt better. I had the food and Ma wasn't in the jail and there was nothing to say they were looking down here or even that they knew where we were. They knew about the school uniforms and they knew we'd gone into Glasgow, but that was it. The backpack was heavy and I tried to get a slow rhythm walking and leaning forwards and breathing slow. It was overcast and dull and the wind was still from the west and it was still warm and all the snow was gone. My thoughts started to go slow. Seeing the picture of Robert made me think about when I killed him. I decided to do it just before Easter. The night I tried to block the door and stop him getting in, and he was raging, and he forced the chest of drawers out the way. I sat on the bed and he stood over me and went, "What did that say, Sal? You've got to be nice to me. If you don't, I'll go and see Peppa." And I said, "You fucking leave her." And he laughed and said, "She's getting old enough." And I said, "If you touch her, I'll kill you. She'll fucking kill you and she'll tell Ma." And he laughed and started undoing his trousers. Afterwards, he fell asleep on my bed. He always did if he was drunk, and I had to belt him and push him to get him off. That night, after I'd been to the bathroom, I looked at him and I thought, I could kill him. And the whole plan came into my mind. Getting the locks and fitting them, running to the woods and surviving and making it so they couldn't blame Ma. I'd read a story about two kids who killed a woman and her daughter, and they stabbed them in the throat because it stops you screaming. I already had the Bear Grylls knife then, and I already knew loads about survival. The next week I got the lock and put it on Peppa's door, and I gave her a key, and I told her to lock herself in when she went to bed, in case Robert was drunk and tried to get in. I didn't say why then, but I told her later, when I said I was going to kill him. The problem was that I never knew when he was going to come in, and I had to get everything ready, and bought, and arranged, and the locks done on Ma's door. I got Mrs. Kerr to show me how to read an ordnance map and plot with a compass, and she nearly shat herself when I asked her, and she went all gushy and kept saying, "This is marvellous, Sal!" And I told her I wanted to go orienteering, and she showed me grid references and the lines of longitude and latitude, and then the way you use the compass and find north, and then also plot the direction you want to go. She also showed me contours and indications of gradient and how to tell what type of woodland there was. Robert didn't come in every night. Sometimes it was weeks and weeks between it. Even when he and Ma had been drinking, he didn't always come in. And after Robert came, Ma was drunk a lot more, and there was a lot more weed and whiz and Mandy in the flat. But if I thought he'd stopped, he hadn't. Sometimes he came in and was all quiet and whispered and called me darling. And sometimes he came in and just grabbed me and yanked me up and held my hair in his fist. He was strong and he twisted my hair. Sometimes afterwards he said things like, "You're very special to me, you know that?" And sometimes he just pushed me back onto the bed and walked out. I never looked at him or saw his eyes. And they were always half closed anyway. Sometimes he sat there afterwards and told me about not telling and about us getting taken away and split up. And sometimes he talked that everything was normal and he handed me tissues and said things like, "I'm away to Glasgow tomorrow, bit of business." Like I wanted to know. Once he sat on the end of my bed and started crying and saying sorry. He was really drunk that night and he leant over and fell asleep. It took months to get everything we needed, and I watched loads of YouTubes on everything. I had everything under my bed, and I was always the first one up to get the post and packages. I had about 12 different emails for the Amazon accounts, and I had so many usernames and passwords, I had to write them down with the account numbers in a wee book I kept in my bedside drawer. I bought nuts and raisins and brioches and sealed bags and cakes and Belvitas that would keep. It was the day Peppa's trainers and Helly Hansen waterproofing backpack arrived, and I made her put them all under the bed, and then I told her I was going to kill Robert. And she said, "You'll go to prison." And I told her I wouldn't. And I told her the plan about running and surviving, and she got excited. Then I told her about what he did with me at night, and how he'd said he was going to start on her, and she went really quiet. And then she said, "Kill him, Sal." For the next 2 weeks, Peppa was excited about running all the time and kept coming up and saying in a low voice like in a film trailer, "We are going to survive." And I told her to be quiet. She started watching Bear Grylls and Ray Mears on YouTube, and I showed her the map and stuff about making a shelter and how we'd make a fire. I showed her the knife and she said, "Nice." She packed her backpack ready and kept it under the bed, and I let her try on the school uniform. And then we hid it. The Saturday before we ran, Ma and Robert didn't come home, and in the morning I got Peppa's breakfast and she went off to gymnastics, and I put the lock on Ma's door and I cleaned all the shavings and sawdust up. The lock worked, and I put the key under the council recycling box in the hall. Ma and Robert get back in the afternoon when I was watching YouTubes, and Ma sat in the front room and drank cider, and Robert smoked weed in front of the telly. That night Robert came into my room. He was rough and angry and kept saying, "Oh, you little bitch," to me. I wanted to do it that night, but the next day was Sunday, and it was no good trying to run on a Sunday. All the train and bus times I'd got were for the week. But I knew it was going to be soon, because I kept feeling calm when I thought about it, and I wasn't panicking at all. It was October, so there would still be some leaf cover in the woods, and there was still a good chance of catching fish. The weather forecast for that week said it was going to be clear and cold, with a northerly wind moving in towards the end of the week. I told Peppa it was going to be that week, and we carried on like normal on Monday. I got her up and got her breakfast, and we both went to school, and Ma went to the club in the afternoon, and Robert was in the flat and not going away. On Monday night, when they were out, I found another 40 quid in his drawer and took it. On the Tuesday, I started dumping all the cards and the laptop and the phones I'd been using. I took out the Sims and threw them into the sea off the wall. I chucked in the book with all the passwords and usernames because I had got everything we needed. On the way back, I saw Ian Leckie coming down the shorefront and he said, "How's my bonnie Sal?" And I said, "Fine." And he asked about Ma and gave me 10 quid for chips for me and Peppa. Robert and Ma went out on Tuesday night and got back about 11. And there was a bit of shouting and banging, and then it went quiet, and I knew Ma had passed out, and I could hear the telly, and I sat in my room waiting. Then the telly went off, and Robert came in and said, "All right, darling, your Ma's out here." He was drunk and stoned and kept staring at me with a grin on his face, and I sat on the end of the bed. He stank of drink and fags and the incense sticks they burned, and he leant on to me, still grinning. Afterwards, he was still grinning, and he lay on his side on the bed, and he was saying things to himself in a little quiet voice. He was wearing his pants, and his jeans were on the floor. I went into the bathroom and washed my face, then got the key from under the recycling box. I opened Ma's door, and she was lying face down on her bed. Her mobile was on the bedside table, and I went in and checked it had charge. Then I locked her in and put the key in front of the door on the hall carpet. I went back to my room. It was quiet and dim, with just my bed light on, and Robert was asleep and breathing slow. I felt under the bed and got the knife and stood over him. Behind him, on the other side of my bed, with the knife pointing down and my left fist over his neck. I did slow breathing and tried to centre myself, and felt the breath coming in and lifting my diaphragm and my belly going in a bit. I felt the breath coming out and my belly going out, and I just made myself aware of that. I stabbed him 3 times. The first was straight into his windpipe, and the knife went through and into the bed underneath, and Robert's eyes opened and his mouth opened. He went, "Ugh!" The second was slightly further out and cut his throat right across, and the blood spat out in a stream and hit the wall, and there was a hissing and whizzing sound coming from Robert. On the third, I stabbed harder and felt the knife go through a muscle and hit a bone, which was probably his spine. The blood gushed and pumped out onto the bed and up the wall, and I stepped back, and I had blood up my arms, and I could feel it on my face. Robert's mouth was open, and his eyes had gone wide, and you could see all the yellow in them. In his throat there was a big, round, black hole, and his head was hanging back. He was still, and then he jerked, and blood gurgled out of the hole in his neck. I stood there for 5 full minutes, which I counted using elephants. Robert made another "och" sound and then didn't move. Blood had soaked into the whole bed and it was all red. I went through and had a shower and washed the knife off, and then I dried myself and put my clothes in the washing and went back into my room and got clean pants and socks and a vest. I didn't look at Robert, and I closed my door so Peppa wouldn't see in. Then I went and banged on her door and she came out. She'd been asleep, and I said, "We're going in the morning." She said, "Is Robert dead?" And I said, "Aye." And she said, "Was it easy?" And I said, "Aye." She asked if Mom was all right, and I said she was in her room asleep. I got the rucksack and checked all the stuff, and Peppa brought her backpack out, and we put on the tights and skirts and blouses from the school uniform, and then Peppa got her quilt and went through and slept on the sofa. I sat in the chair in the front room watching her sleep and set the alarm on my phone for 5:30 a.m. It was dark by the time I got to the climb up towards our woods, but there was a moon and it kept appearing from behind the clouds that were running along the west wind. I went slow and sometimes I stopped and put the backpack down and stretched and flexed my shoulders. When the moon came out, it was bright and clear and I could see everything in silver and grey. I heard a tawny owl screeching along the plantation woods, and as I climbed the steep bank up to our woods, three deer jumped out of the bracken and bounded up away from me. When the cloud went over the moon, it was almost too dark to see, and I walked slower and tried to feel what it was in front of me. It took a long time to get up to the start of the birch and pine in our woods, and I was puffing and breathing hard lugging that backpack. The clouds cleared again and the moon was bright as I got to our woods, and there were sharp shadows of trees and diamond patches of silver light on the ground. The trees waved in the breeze and the light patches stretched and closed. The trees sounded like someone shuffling cards, and there was my steps in the leaves and sometimes twigs cracking. I could smell the fire from a way off, and as I got nearer, I saw a very faint glow and the round shape of the bender through the trees. Peppa had kept the fire going all day. I called, "Peppa," as I came up to the bender, and I heard her shout, "Yo, Sal!" as she came running out and we hugged. The fire was going well and there was a new stack of wood by it. "You've been away for ages. I was getting worried about you." "I was worried about you," I said. "Did you get me a book?" "Aye, I got you two. And a steak." She poked the sticks in the fire into a blaze and I started unpacking the backpack. I showed her the books and she got a head torch and looked at them and then started reading Kidnapped while I put the kettle on. I said, "Were you okay? Did you see anybody?" And she kept on reading and then she looked up and said, "Aye, I met a lady. She made me a fire because mine had gone out. She's called Ingrid." Chapter 7. Ingrid. Peppa told me what happened. She slept a lot after I left, and then she tried to cut up the rabbit skins and make a hat, but she couldn't get the needle through the skins right, and she cut all the bits wrong, and she said it looked like a rabbit that had been in a blender when she'd finished. And then she tried to get the fire going, but couldn't get the little stick started off the embers. She drank some boiled water from the kettle and ate a brioche and almonds and raisins, and then she fell asleep again. When she woke, there was a woman squatting in the entrance of the bender and looking at her. She jumped and panicked and wondered if she should shoot her with the air gun, but the woman was smiling and holding a bunch of birch bark and pointing at the fire. The woman was old and had long grey hair and was wearing a long, long coat all the way to the ground made of waxy cloth and had scarves tied up in her hair. Her face was flat and she had a small nose and eyes like she was Chinese. She had big white teeth and was wearing red lipstick and had bangles and beads on her wrists. There was a wee white scar on her cheekbone just under her eye in the shape of a crescent moon. But she was smiling and saying things to Peppa in a foreign language, and she started blowing at the embers of the fire, and then she shredded up the birch bark and got a striker and flint out and made sparks and got an ember going just like I did. She blew it and fed it with bark and twigs and burned ends, and then she said something else in foreign and walked off into the wood. Peppa didn't know whether to run or not, and she sat on the bed in the bender, wishing she had a phone so she could phone me and ask what to do. Then the woman came back with a stack of sticks and some bigger bits of wood, and she snapped the longer branches up and got the fire going. Then she went, "Good," to Peppa, and Peppa said thanks. The woman went off again and Peppa could hear her pulling sticks out of the undergrowth and snapping branches, and all the time she was talking and muttering, and sometimes she laughed like there was someone else there. Peppa came out of the bender and watched her. She was bundling sticks and wood under her arm and striding about pulling and snapping and muttering all in her language. The woman came back and made a pyramid fire and then started stacking more wood next to it, And Peppa sat by it, and the woman watched the fire burning for a bit, and then said, good, again. Then she went off to get more wood, and eventually there was a huge pile, all snapped to the right length, stacked by the fire. Peppa didn't feel scared of the woman, and she didn't think she'd tell on us, so she put the kettle on and said, are you wanting a cup of tea? And the woman said, yeah, tea, and sat down opposite Peppa and warmed her hands. The kettle boiled and Peppa made her tea with milk and sugar in it like we have, and the woman drank it and said, good. Peppa said, can you speak English? And the woman said, yes, I can. My name is Ingrid. I'm a doctor. I prefer to speak German. Can you speak German? And Peppa said she didn't, and the woman said, then I shall teach you. And then the woman said, I too live in a bender. Mine is larger and better constructed than yours. Peppa said, my sister made it. She's gone to town to get food. And then the woman stood up and said, good. Thank you for the tea. Do not allow the fire to go out again. You now have a plentiful supply of wood. And off she went. Peppa told me all this the night I got back while she was eating the steak I got her, and I had corned beef and we both had beans. I started to worry about Ingrid, because now someone knew where we were, they could tell. And if people came looking for us and asked, they might say, aye, there are two lassies living in a bender up there in the woods. But Peppa said she wouldn't, and that we could trust her because she lived in a bender too. And she was out on her own in the woods, and she didn't look like a wanky walker in a cagoule and walking boots. In fact, she sounded like she looked like a witch. And I said that, and Peppa said, aye, she did. But Peppa seemed to trust her, and she was okay about it, so I thought I wouldn't worry. I was really tired after walking all the way back with the food, so I left off telling Peppa about the stuff on the internet till tomorrow, and we stacked up the fire and went to bed. Because Ingrid spoke German and looked like a witch, it made me think of the Nachtexten and the Second World War at the Battle of Stalingrad, which is my favourite battle in a war. Nachtexten means night witches in German, and it was the name the Germans gave to women who flew Russian bombers at night and attacked them. So I told Peppa about them, and I had told her before, but she likes it. They were a woman-only squadron of bombers, and they flew really old, flimsy biplanes made of cloth and wood, and they could only carry 6 bombs at a time. They flew slow, but the little biplanes could dodge the German guns and fighter planes. And then they went so slow that the German planes stalled, which means their engine stopped working in the air. Also, the Nachtexten used to shut their engines off when they were coming in at night, low over the Germans so they didn't hear them, and they could drop bombs right on them. The Germans thought the sound of the wind on the gliding plane was like a witch's broom. They killed loads and loads of Germans, which is fair because German had invaded their country and killed loads of Russians, and then they started the war, and they murdered all the Jews. The German soldiers were so scared of the Russian women, they called them Nachtexten, and they thought they were witches and demons because nobody else dared to fly at night and bomb them, so they thought they were magic. This happened in 1942 and 1943 when they were fighting over Stalingrad, which was a city in southern Russia that is now called Volgograd. I saw a film called Enemy at the Gates about snipers in the battle that I really liked, and then I read about it on Wikipedia. Peppa fell asleep when I was telling her all this stuff and we were both really warm. The next day, we went to the loch fishing for pike with the plugs and wire traces. It was sunny and it felt warm in the sun and the wind was only light. As we walked down, I told her about the internet stuff and Ma and our rehab and about the papers and the search for us and the CCTV. She was worried about Ma, but I said it was good they were going to try and dry her out and stop her drinking, and she wasn't in jail, so they knew she didn't kill Robert. Peppa said, what will happen if they find us? I said, I'll get arrested and charged with killing Robert, and you'll get put into care. And she got upset then, and bit her bottom lip, and looked down and stopped walking. Then she said, but I'm glad you killed Robert. And I said, I know. And she said, you can just tell them why you did it and why we ran and they might let you go. I'd thought of that too. I thought about telling about Robert before and him saying he was going to go in Peppa's room and him hitting Ma and being drunk and stoned all the time. But I knew the first thing that would happen would be he'd get arrested and we'd get taken and split up, because that was what always happened. Plus, nobody would believe that Maud didn't know. She might get charged with abuse or neglecting us and then go to jail. I had read stories about it on the news websites, where the mother got charged and went to jail, and the stepdad went for longer because he was the one who did all the bad stuff, like killing a baby or starving a little girl. But they said the mother let it happen, and she got done too. They always blame the mother of any kid who gets abused or hurt. But it is always the man who does it. Peppa said, "Can we go and get Ma? You said we'd get her and she could come and live with us in the forest." "Aye, but not now, Peppa. She needs to get better from drinking. She needs to go into a recovery programme. Ian Leckie said that in his tweet." "When she's better, will we get her?" I said, "Aye, we will." But I didn't know how. I had explained to Peppa about Ma having a disease called alcoholism, which is an addiction to alcohol that makes you stop being normal and makes you need to drink all the time like Ma, and fall asleep and cry and not look after your kids. It also makes you accept the unacceptable in other people and have a high tolerance of inappropriate behaviour. It said on one of the websites I read about it. Like with Robert, she just let him hit her and take her money and hit us because she had a disease that made her think that was all right. It's caused by having different chemistry in your brain that makes you want and crave the thing that's making you ill, and you don't even know you've got it, and you deny you're ill. Ma used to go, "I just need a wee drink, Sal, to make me calm down." And I'd go and get her a can or a bottle of cider I'd hidden for her. She called it a wee drink, but it was never a wee drink. If they got us and I got charged with killing Robert, they would charge me with murder, not culpable homicide, because they would know I had planned it. And in Scottish law, if you plan it and arrange it, you can only be charged with murder. And that would be a life sentence of at least about 20 years in prison. So even if I told them why I did it, it wouldn't matter, because the law in Scotland says if you plan it, then it is murder. And I planned it for months. I read a lot about doing a murder and charges and the way they put you on trial and defences. The only defence I would have is that I am mad and I didn't know what I was doing was wrong. But I'm not mad, and I knew it was against the law, and I still did it. And I don't think it was wrong. If someone is going to destroy everything and doesn't care, or if they want to pull everybody else into their own evil, then you have to kill them. When I was stabbing Robert, I felt calm and happy. And I knew I was right. Like the Nicotexan had to kill the Germans. Peppa ran down to the lock through the bracken and past the warren where we got the first rabbit. Bright sunshine is not good for pike fishing, and they stay in the shade, so we walked along the beach and climbed along the lock edge to where there were trees and overhanging branches putting shade in the water. There was a big tree that had toppled in, and it was half under, and that was a good place for pike, which are ambush predators, and wait in weeds or submerged trees to dart out at little fish going past. I set up the rod and tied on a trace and a plug, which was white with a red head, and had a little rattle in it, which sends out sound waves that attract pike. I showed Peppa how to take off the bail arm and hold the line with one finger, then bring the rod back and flick it forwards, aiming it to the sky if you wanted it to go far, and point the rod after the plug as it went through the air. She tried a few and got it, and started flicking the plug out and wobbling it back along the trees. I sat and watched her, and thought about how to cook a pike if we got one. They are bony, and you have to try and get the backbone out. But I could do that with my Bear Grylls knife. Peppa said, "I think it's stuck, Sal." And she was trying to wind the reel in, and it wasn't turning, and the line was tight all the way out too by the tree. Then there was a huge splash and a swirl on the water, and Peppa fell back on her bum, still holding the rod, and shouted, "Sal, I've got one!" The rod was bending right over, and the line was cutting and zooming across the water away from the tree, and I said, "Reel it in, Peppa!" And she started trying to reel it, but it was too strong, and the rod kept jerking and banging where it was fighting. It was a big one. Peppa said, "Sal, you do it." And I took the rod off her, and I felt the weight and the tugging of the fish through it, and the spool was spinning and taking line off where the pike was running away out into the lock. The line was only 10 pounds, which is 4.5 kilos, and I was scared the pike was heavier than that and it would snap it. But it held, and I got the rod up high, and I let it absorb the bucks and kicks from the pike. Then I reeled in as hard as I could and the pike jumped and we saw it flash out and curl above the water, all gold and yellow in the sunshine. Peppa went, "It's a fucking monster!" And it was. It splashed back in and I kept the line taut and reeled in more. I said, "We're going to get this, Peppa." And I reeled in more. It was close in now and we could see it going like a torpedo with a plug in its mouth and the line cutting through the water to the rod. I kept reeling and it seemed to stop pulling and jerking the closer it got to the shore. I shouted to Peppa to get a stick and she ran into the trees and I could hear her crashing and snapping in there. I walked backwards up the beach and started to drag the pike up out of the water and the line was so tight it was pinging and twanging with the weight of it. I dragged it so only its tail was still in the water and it was big. Its head was the size of mine and its mouth could have taken it all in. It looked like it was grinning at us. Peppa ran up with a stick about 2 foot long she'd snapped off a tree and I put the rod down and got the stick and swung it back as far as I could and belted the pike on the back of the head as hard as I could. With the smack of the stick, it went all tense and then shuddered and whacked its tail back and forth. The plug was hooked into its mouth by both trebles at the side. The pike shuddered again and then it went still, but its eyes were open and it grinned. Peppa went, "Bloody hell, Sal." She knelt down next to it and put her hand out to touch its head. I was just going to say don't when the pike suddenly turned its head and opened its mouth and snapped. Peppa sprang back and screamed, clutching her hand and wrist. And I saw blood spurt out from it and she screamed again and I hit the pike again. Peppa was hopping along the shore, holding her hand and shouting, "It fucking bit me! Oh, it bit me, bastard!" I ran to her and looked down and there were 3 long slashes streaming blood down her hand and onto her wrist. I breathed and told myself not to panic, but my heart was slamming and I felt dizzy when I saw her blood. It was pouring out and dripping on the stones. She was holding her hand out and screaming as it bled and red was running down her arm and onto her t-shirt. I said, "Hold it up and squeeze above your wrist." And I pulled off my fleece and vest and ripped the vest open and she was going, ah, you bastard. I got her hand and bound it as hard as I could with the vest, round and round, as tight as I could get it. And she was going, "Oh, it's sore, Sal. Oh, it's sore." Some blood was coming out from under the vest and a patch of red was swelling up in the middle. I said, "Keep it high." And she held it above her head and blood dripped down her arm. I got her to sit and breathe deep and keep her hand up and the blood seemed to stop and there was just a patch the size of a 50p in the middle of the vest. I got one of my laces out of my trainers and pulled my fleece back on. Then I bound the lace round her forearm to make a tourniquet and stop the bleeding. I kept saying, "It's all right, Peppa. It's all right." She said, "Will I bleed to death?" And I said she was being daft. She said, "I thought it was dead." And I said, "So did I, but it is now." And we looked back up the beach and it was on its side, still, with its silvery belly towards us. "That is one big bastard," said Peppa. "I should have brought the first aid kit. I will next time," I said. I told her to stay where she was and keep her hand up, and I went and kicked the pike to make sure it was dead. And it jerked a bit and then went still again. And I got the hooks out and wound in the plug onto the rod. Then I got my knife and cut its head off, and it was big and heavy, and I had to push it with all my weight to get the knife through its backbone. Then I gutted it, and it was full of spawn and big lumps that looked like orange peel. I chucked the guts and the head into the lock, and then I got the rod and lugged the pike up over my shoulder. Even without its head, it was as long as my legs. Pike have razor-sharp teeth that grow in rows and can cut through even thick fishing line. The teeth have an anticoagulant on them which makes wounds bleed a lot and stops them clotting. This is to help them hunt because they can bite and injure a fish and then just watch it bleed to death before they eat it. Peppa was right. They are bastards. I carried the pike and the rod and Peppa walked up slowly from the lock holding her hand up. She kept stopping and saying, "Oh, throbbing, Sal." And I just walked with her. The sun had gone in and it started spitting rain on a westerly breeze, and off over the lock the clouds were dark. It took a long time to get back up to the bender, and by the time we got there it was raining hard, and we were both soaked and the fire had gone out. I dumped the pike and got Peppa into the bender and got her Helly Hansen and put it on her and let her lie there. The wood pile had got soaked and I was angry that I hadn't stacked some inside to stay dry when we went off. A lot of survival is planning, stopping, thinking and planning and trying to see what can go wrong and thinking about what will happen if things change. I hadn't done that in the morning because the sun was out and Peppa was excited about fishing and I was happy because I'd got back safe from town and was with her again and we were still free. So I didn't stop and think before we left and that was a lesson for me because now we were cold and wet and didn't have a fire. I couldn't make a fire in the place we had it and I had to try and start a small one in the entrance of the bender where the rain couldn't get it. I found a few drier sticks in the bottom of the pile and stacked the rest in the bender to dry. Then I found some twigs and leaves and dry grass in the bender that was still dry and made a tinder bundle. You have to strike the steel and flint and get a big spark onto the tinder and then let it smoulder a bit and then blow it slowly and steady until it grows and glows. And then if you keep blowing air through it, it will burst into flames and you can lay it down and use small dry twigs and grass to get it going. I had seen it done loads of times on YouTube and so far I've had no trouble with the fire. But the tinder was still a bit damp and I couldn't get the spark to take. I struck and struck and struck and big flashing sparks dropped down onto the bundle but nothing took. Peppa was lying on the bed watching and she said, "Sal, I'm hungry." I stopped and got her some cake and bread and nuts and dried apricots from the backpack. We had a bit of boiled water in the kettle and I got her a drink of water. After she'd eaten, she said she was cold and she got into the sleeping bag and pulled the blankets over her. I kept on at the tinder with the striker and wished I'd brought a lighter or some fire lighters. Fire isn't just good for cooking and staying warm, but it's good for your spirit. When we got here all those days ago, I was tense and angry and doubting everything we'd done, and I was getting snappy with Peppa when I was doing the first shelter. But as soon as we got the fire going, I felt better. Just sitting and looking into it and feeling the heat makes you calm and you feel like you belong where you are. And sitting there on the first night by the fire, I felt like what we'd done was right, and killing Robert was right, and everything would work out for us. And that was the fire that made me feel that. That's why you can't neglect your fire like I'd done that morning. I was striking and striking, and the rain was hammering down now, and splashing in onto my legs, and onto the spot where I wanted to make the fire. I went further in and brushed the ground dry of leaves and twigs down to the soil. I kept on striking and letting the sparks drop onto the tinder bundle, but it was still not taking. Sometimes a little ember would start and glow and then just go out. Every time it did, I felt worse, and every strike that didn't work made me feel more sad and tired. In a crisis, in survival, you have to stop and think and plan. The SES Survival Handbook says the most important factor in long-term survival is attitude. The way you think affects your chances of thriving. If you're negative and only think things are going to get worse or you can't go on, then you will start acting like that. And the more you think and act like that, the worse things get and the more you make bad decisions. And that is when you have to stop and think and plan and take action to make the situation better. Even a small thing can help. So I stopped striking and I got my waterproof and got up from sitting and looked at Peppa and she was asleep. And her sore hand was sticking out from the blanket, with the vest still tied on it and the tourniquet. I loosened the tourniquet and felt her fingers, and they were really cold. I slid my hand down her back, inside her clothes, and her back was warm. So I tucked her up with the blankets, and then I went out into the rain with my hood up. I needed to walk and think, and I went up from the bender where the slope starts with birch and spruce. I climbed up, slipping a bit on the wet leaves, and carried on along a deer path through the spruce. Further up, there were really tall larches with big spaces under them, covered in yellow needles. Larch is a coniferous tree which changes in winter and sheds its old needles and then grows new green ones in spring. It goes the colour of butter in autumn and grows straight and very strong, and they used to use it to make ships' masts. The rain was still coming down hard, and I climbed over a little ridge of rocks all covered in brambles and ferns and came up on a flat bit, where there were big spruce with branches that spread right out like huge skirts around the trees and were very deep green and glistening in the rain. Spruce is brilliant for waterproofing shelters and you can use the base of one for a shelter by taking out a few lower branches and using the ones above for a roof. I thought I'd cut some to try and make a platform of spruce branches to go high up over our fire and keep the worst of the rain off it. You need some long poles to make a base about 2 metres up above the fire between the trees, and then you can pile on spruce branches and then they stop the rain getting in the fire below. I'd seen Ed Stafford make one when he was marooned on the Okavango Delta, and I had kept his fire dry even in the African rainy season. I'd also seen him dry a tinder bundle by stuffing it down his pants for a day and letting his body heat dry the damp out of it. I wondered if I should have tried that. I pushed my way into a big spruce and started cutting out lower branches with my knife. Inside, the branches by the trunk of the tree, it was completely dry, and even the twigs in the branches snapped like twiglets. Even though the rain was hammering down just outside, the inside of the tree stayed bone dry. That's how waterproof the needles on the branches are. I snapped loads of twigs off them and filled the pockets of my jacket with them. Then I saw a bundle of dry twigs in a ball, just where one of the branches met the trunk above my head. I pulled it down, and it was a bird's nest. It had a little hollow in the middle of it lined with soft, dry grass and little white downy feathers. It was thin, spruce twigs all woven and tangled together into a ball. It was lovely, and I held it in my hands. It must have been from a migratory bird that had come to the forest for summer and was now somewhere like Africa. She spent the whole summer making it and having her eggs in it and feeding the fledglings and teaching them to fly. But it was also really dry and brilliant for tinder, so I stuffed it in my jacket and got all the spruce boughs and dragged them back to the bender. Then I got some long dead poles of larch and wedged them up between the trees outside the bender. I made a kind of triangle frame as far as I could reach up, which was about 2.5 metres above where we had the fire outside the entrance to the bender. It was still raining, but the damp and slime on the tree bark helped me slide the poles between the tree trunks and set them horizontal. Then I crisscrossed smaller branches over it to make a roof, and then I piled all the spruce branches up on it so they lay flat and didn't let any light through. And it worked. The rain was still coming down straight and hard all around, but the spot under it with the ashes from our fire was covered. It was like an umbrella. I got rocks then and made a platform to keep the fire off wet ground, and then I put the bird's nest on the rock and got the striker. I got a spark that took with the third strike, and I blew the ember and it glowed, and I blew more and got a flame. I piled on the dry twigs and it was soon going well, and I used the dry sticks from the bender to make the pyramid, and I stacked more sticks by it to dry it in its heat. I sat on a rock and watched it starting to fire flames up and pump out smoke and crackle and spit. I said thank you to the bird for the nest. I got water from the burn and set the kettle on the frame to boil and set more wood to dry by the fire, and then I got the first aid kit. Peppa was still sleeping, but her arm was outside the blankets. I put on a head torch so I could see, and I took off the tourniquet and slowly unwrapped the vest around her hand. She had 3 long slashes going right down her hand and onto her wrist, and the blood was going thick along them, but her hand and wrist were pale and clammy, and the skin was crinkly and white like it had been in a swimming pool for a long time. She stayed asleep while I washed them down with cotton wool and boiled water. There were little red lines running up her arm away from the cuts that looked like they had been done with a red pen. I was starting to worry about infection, so I got the iodine and dabbed it all along the cuts, and her skin went yellow, and that woke her up, and she jerked away from me and screamed. "I've got to, Peppa, or it'll get infected," I said. She screwed her eyes up and bit her bottom lip while I cleaned it with the iodine, and she kept going, "Sore, sore, Sal, sore." I got her 2 ibuprofen and codeine from the first aid kit and made her take them with water. They are really good painkillers, and they would also make her drowsy, which is good because her body needed to rest while it healed itself from the cut. I put cotton wool across the cuts and then bandaged it up. I moved across so she could see out and see the fire. "Look, I made a fire in a rainstorm," I said, and she smiled. "I made an umbrella to keep the rain off it," she said. "Clever, Sal." Then I made tea for us with milk and sugar, and I opened another can of beans, and we had beans and bread and cake. It was getting dark now, and the rain was easing off a bit, and I stacked up more wood on the fire to keep it going and left more drying by it. I got the pike and I hung it up over the fire with paracord from the frame to see if it would smoke and cook slow overnight. Peppa was drifting off into sleep, and I got my things off and got in behind her, and we snuggled down while it got dark and the rain dripped outside and the fire hissed. Chapter 8. Fever. Peppa had a fever in the morning, and she woke me wriggling and sweating. I got out of bed and got the fire going from the embers. The rain had stopped, and I boiled water, then got the vest and washed it out and soaked it, and mopped Peppa's forehead to cool it. And she was burning and writhing about, and I had a panic pain in my chest and belly. She kept waking up a little bit and looking up and then closing her eyes again. Sometimes she muttered and said things I didn't understand. I tried to get her to drink water, but she wouldn't, and kept going floppy and falling asleep. I got the fire banked up with wood, and then went and collected more. I went back and unwrapped her bandage. The red lines were going all the way up her arm now, and all around the cut was swollen and red, and there was pus in the cuts. I cleaned them all out again and used the iodine to disinfect it all, and she didn't even wake up. I put on a new bandage and cotton wool over it all.